Welcome to the Joy Powered Podcast, where we talk about embracing humanity in the workplace. I'm Susan White, a national HR consultant. With me is my co-host and friend, Jody Curtis, owner of Purple Inc., an HR consulting firm, and author of Joy Powered and the Joy Powered Family.
In today's episode, we are going to talk about executive coaching. And guess what? We have our own in-house expert on executive coaching. The person who I send any of my clients to who need coaching is our own Susan White.
Yay!
Yay. So, Susan, how long have you been doing executive coaching?
I've been doing executive coaching, I'd say the last 3 years or so, and it really kind of happened organically. I am not a certified executive coach, and as we'll talk about, there's a number of programs out there where you can get credentialed in this. What I really had was my just practical experience after over 30 years in a large corporate environment and having coached a lot of colleagues and executives in their roles. But as I was out doing consulting, I was often doing business with different companies and helping them with whatever HR initiative they had. And periodically, I started getting requests saying, do you ever do executive coaching? We have an executive here that we think you could be helpful with. You know our business. You understand, you know, what our mission is. Would you be willing to do it? So you know me. I'll say yes to anything once. And I really have loved it.
Nice. Well, and that's, I think it's important to highlight you've been doing executive coaching, what'd you say, for 3.5 years on your own. But I am certain you've been doing executive coaching for 33 years, right? Just was maybe not always called that or some sort of unofficial. And who do you think are the types of clients who or types of people who benefit from executive coaching?
You know, I would say traditionally, executive coaching has been used when you have somebody in the C-suite or some other person that might be a high potential that's someday maybe in the top echelon of your company. But I'm going to tell you, I think executive coaching is helpful for anybody at any time in their career. An executive coach is usually brought in when somebody who's doing well in most all aspects of their job, except for one or maybe two, and they think, you know, this person could benefit if someone came in and really helped them focus on, for example, being able to be a better team player, or maybe somebody who is just not good at talking through issues or, you know, having the tough conversations. Whatever that particular element is that they think they need coaching on, I think that every person in the workplace could benefit from having an executive coach help them through something, some barrier that's holding them back.
Right. I totally agree. Many times we will get a call from a client at Purple Inc. that is looking for training. And they might even say, well, we need training on this topic because we have a person or two who's really struggling with this. And I have many times suggested coaching as opposed to training. Although obviously I'm an advocate for training and you can hit a lot of people with one topic. Many times an individual just needs that individual one-on-one coaching time.
Have you ever seen in a company where they put everybody through some training program and they're really trying to get the message to one person?
Exactly.
And everybody in the room was thinking, you know, I don't need this training. I know Joe does, but why are we all here?
And typically the person who is the one who needs it doesn't realize they're that person either, right? They don't even know.
Well, executive coaching allows you to, with laser focus, really target the individual, help them build a plan on how are we going to fix whatever the issue is.
Right. How do you actually define coaching, Susan?
Well, you know, in preparation for today, I did a little research and I found that the Executive Coach Academy defines executive coaching as a facilitative one-on-one mutually designed relationship between a professional coach and a key contributor who has a powerful position in the organization.
I like it. And you mentioned that you are not certified. Would you recommend, if other people are interested in being a coach, that they look at certification and or if someone is looking for an executive coach, do they need to be certified?
Oh, great questions. Well, I think that coaching certification is a good thing. I think that it helps somebody who maybe doesn't have a lot of experience doing it, they have more of a desire to do it, to go in and really, whichever package they decide to get involved in. We'll give them a framework and we'll hopefully help them come out on the other side of it with a really good, solid process. Now, as I mentioned, I am not certified, so I've really developed a process based on some of my real-world experience, which I think I'm going to walk through in just a moment because I think it would be helpful for any of our listeners. And, you know, you may be an HR person in your company, and they're looking to you to help to coach the executives there. I'm hoping that what I provide could give you a nice framework. Now, where would you go if you wanted to get accredited? It's so easy to just Google executive coaching, and you'll find lots of different alternatives out there. Some business schools have them. Probably the easiest place to go would be to the International Coach Federation, the ICF, and they accredit coaches, and they also provide a nice resource if you're a business out there thinking, I don't really want to get someone accredited on my team to be an executive coach, but I periodically might want to use one. You can certainly go there, and they've got a list of certified coaches.
And you said it was easy to go there, but it actually is a very intensive program.
Oh, there you go.
It's easy to Google it, I think is what you meant. But
exactly.
For someone to get the certification, that's a long process that requires a lot of practicing and experience and education.
Absolutely. I had a friend who recently went through a program, and before you actually complete that program, you have to demonstrate you've got several executive coaching clients that you are working with, and you have to demonstrate that you had success with them. So yeah, please.
Oh, nice.
It's not I use the word easy way too easily.
Susan, I think you're certified as well, but probably just certified through the School of Hard Knocks, right? Or School of Many Years of Experience in doing this. So yeah. So can you walk us through maybe a sample of your process or walk us through how you would approach a client?
I sure would. And I would love any input you might have, Jody, because I think we can always strengthen the process or maybe some experiences that you've had as you've coached people just in your natural work. So, Jody, the first thing I like to do when I get a new executive coaching client is I really want to start with that person's manager or direct leader. And the reason I want to do that is because, first of all, that's usually who has decided the person has some type of a issue that they need to work through. And this may not be a shared perception by the individual. So I really want to start with, why does the leader or the manager of this person think that there's something that needs to be fixed? And when I meet with that leader, I will ask for their perception of the person's strengths, their weaknesses, and really the opportunity they think they have. Sometimes it makes sense to do a 360. And I know that you're familiar, obviously, most of our listeners would be as well.
Right.
But a 360 would enable you to find out not only what the leader thinks, and you're certainly going to get input from the person who you're going to coach, but also some of their peers. You know, what are they seeing in meetings? What do they see when they work on group projects? I also think it's important to hear if that person manages people. I'd love to hear what that individual's direct reports think. And I think it enables you to really come at it before you start thinking about how are we going to attack this particular issue, really understand what people think. Because if it's only a boss thinking it, it may not be real.
Right. And if the coaching client's organization does not do a 360, can you facilitate that for them?
Oh, absolutely. There's wonderful instruments out there. And if your company doesn't have something in-house you already use, that's something as a career coach I love to offer up. I work with a firm out of Ohio that it's a very simple, easy, affordable process. And I think just very helpful for the individual to get a full picture of how they are viewed.
Right. Very few people really get that opportunity, I think, to get that kind of feedback from their peers and their teams, and hopefully they're getting it from their bosses or supervisors, but many times they're not. And so I think that's such a valuable process for people to go through.
I do. I've seen some companies I've worked with that when they have some type of a leadership program or any type of developmental thing, that's the first thing they offer the individual. There may not be any reason to think there's a problem here, but let's let the individual have that insight of a full picture of how they're viewed. And then as they figure out what are the things, the strengths they have that they want to really capitalize on, well, it's super to hear from all those people you work with closely what those are, as well as opportunities to get better.
Mm-hmm. Very good.
So that's really step one. Step one is to meet in my mind, is to meet with the leader. And then step two is to talk to the individual themselves and find out, do they see this issue that the manager has brought me in to help them coach them through as a real issue? One of my favorite coaching models I've seen is the first thing you have to do to ever really effectively coach someone is step one is awareness. Right. Is the individual really aware that this is a problem? Step two is this problem owned by the individual? So does the individual really believe that they're the person who's held accountable for it, that they're responsible for it? You know, for example, let's say the manager thinks that the individual isn't good at meeting deadlines, mm-hmm. right? And I meet with the individual and you say, yeah, you're right. Susan, I have not been able to meet any of my deadlines year to date. But here's the reason. My boss dumps the projects on me on Friday afternoons and expects them on Monday morning. Uh-huh. You know, and so when I get in a situation like that and I realize the person doesn't feel like they own it, I could do the best coaching in the world and I'm not going to make them better because right. they don't feel like they own it.
Right.
So that causes me to go back to the leader. We have a whole different kind of conversation.
Right. Do you sometimes, I'm wondering if many times you might get a client where the boss thinks there's a problem and wants you to talk to them about it and not be involved in the
yes.
process. Is that common as well?
It is. And I say, you know, I got to be honest with you. The person has to hear it from you. If you think that this is an issue, the first time they hear it shouldn't be from the executive coach they hired in from the outside. I'm vested in their success at fixing it, but you own telling them.
Right. I was thinking that would have to be a key part of the ownership for the individual even, that,
That's right.
Susan White says I have a problem meeting deadlines, right?
And so who cares?
Right.
Yeah, that's so true. So, you know, step two is they have to really believe that they can fix the problem, that they own it. Step three is a coaching client has to be motivated to fix it or to change it. And I will tell you that where this could go awry is if, let's say the person says, the problem is that the manager gives me, you know, this person is just not a good team player and they really need to work well with others. And so I need you to help them, you know, work across the silos and really be our role model of team spirit. And I get there and I meet with the individual and they say, yeah, that's right. I'm not a team player. That is who I am. I am extremely competitive. I love to win. And that is really why I've been so successful all these years. And mm-hmm. that person's not motivated, at least in that conversation. I need to help work on why it's in their best interest, this teamwork that the manager wants them to work on. I've got to sometimes pull back that manager in and explain, okay, we have been paying you on straight commission. And the fact is there's going to be a component of your incentive comp that we're going to move to team.
Right.
Because otherwise, that person is not motivated to change.
Exactly.
So I really do need to have that motivation. And then once we have the issue that they're aware of, they realize they own it, and they're motivated to change, then executive coaching can really make the difference.
Nice. That's terrific.
Okay, so after, I would say, I've met with the manager, I've met with the individual, and we all agree executive coaching makes sense in this particular case. Step three is really developing an action plan. And that's where the coaching client and myself say, okay, here's what the real issue is. And I try to say, let's break it down into either the three parts of this issue that we want to attack, or sometimes if the person has more than one issue, we'll, you know, actually come up with two on one and one on one. I'm a real believer in the power of three. I don't think that a person can really successfully conquer almost any challenge if there's more than three big areas of focus.
I like it.
Yeah. Happy to have less, but no more than three. And so for each of those, let's say it's somebody who is having trouble with teamwork and they're motivated at this point to make a change, then maybe that teamwork is one is like building relationships. So one area of focus we're going to do is how do we maybe if you've been in the company for a while, it's rebuilding relationships. What can we do? And so that's going to be an area of focus. Maybe a second one is how can I create an environment where I welcome people in on projects I'm working in? So maybe it's going to be inviting others in on projects. And then we'll come up with a third one. So for each of those areas of focus, together we talk about what are some tactical things we can do. I usually like to go away and do some research and find what are some tools out there that's going to focus on this area of need. As I've talked about in prior podcasts, I love TED Talks.
Right.
Give me a topic. We're going to find a TED Talk to help you through through it. I also like books. There's some real good books. If the person, I try to find from them, do they like podcasts? Do they like YouTube videos? Do they like to read? Do they like to go to workshops? There's lots of in-person types of things that they could go to. What type of learning style really works for them?
That's great.
I will also sometimes say maybe we just try some things. In each area of focus, maybe there's some new behaviors that I'm going to ask you to trust me to try, and then we're going to debrief after you do those, and we'll learn from those. I found that to be really effective as well.
Nice. And what about a timeline overall? Do you typically start a coaching relationship thinking we'll meet 3 times or 10 times, or does it, you just keep going to see how it goes?
Yeah, that's a great question. It really depends on the company and the individual and really the sense of urgency that there might be. Some companies, when they bring in an executive coach, they say, listen, we'd love to have you work with her or work with him maybe 5 times and see what we can do. Other places, they'll say, listen, here's the issue, and we don't care how long it takes. We want the person at the end of this to be really comfortable in their own skin on, you know, talking to other people or whatever it is. So I really try to tailor it to their needs. If left to my own devices and I get a chance just to work with someone until I feel like they're really feeling good, on the average, it's usually 3 to 6 months, depending on the topic and the issue.
And do you prefer to do it on a monthly basis, or do you like to give some people more time in between sessions to be able to practice or try different things?
I like to get together every 2 to 3 weeks.
The reason
I like to do that is because I think it keeps it on the radar. When they know that in 2 weeks or 3 weeks from now, they're going to be back with me and we're going to talk about how things went, or maybe they're going to have, you know, read a book, or they're going to have watched a YouTube video that we're going to debrief. I just think it keeps the rhythm better. Now, I've done it different ways. I've had some people who wanted to meet every week, and I've had some who needs to do it once a month. Now, I've not always done these in person either.
I was just going to ask that.
I love in person. You know, that's ideal. But I think you can have just as effective meetings on Skype, on Google Chat, on any number of other platforms. And that's helpful too, because people travel a lot for their work, and it doesn't necessarily have to be in person.
Right. Well, I like your approach to this. It seems very natural, very practical, and I know it's important to you to get to know the other person and to understand their style.
It really is. Well, I think for you to really trust your executive coach, you have to build that rapport in the beginning. And I really try to spend my first meeting, you know, sharing my vulnerability, finding out their vulnerability, and making sure that they feel comfortable with me. So far, I've never had anybody, you know, say, hey, I think I'd like a different coach, but I would get that. I would understand, because it's just for you to really be coached, especially executive coached, I think you have to have trust and faith and really like the person you're working with.
Right. And coaching has been around for a long time, but I feel like I hear more about it these days. I know in my former life, people went to or were sent to coaches when they had problems.
Yes.
Now I think many executives, leaders, managers, it's a more even a part of company cultures, right? That's just what they do to help people is have coaches.
I agree. I think there used to be a little stigma around it, like,
yes,
I've got to go see an executive coach.
Right.
Now it's offered as a perk when you get in the fast track at a lot of companies, when you hit the C-suite, or if you're, you know, designated as a high potential, it's a perk.
So. Right. I love thinking of that as a perk, really, that every single person could be benefiting from.
I agree. Well, what I like to do, whenever I close out an executive coaching assignment, is I like to put on my own calendar a follow-up date, like in 6 to 9 months. And I don't mention it to them, but I do it myself. I reach out to them just with a note just to see how things are going. And if whatever it was we worked on, has it been sustained? Do they feel like they really have knocked down that obstacle? And usually they do. Usually I love hearing about the successes that they've had. And if they didn't, then I would offer to, you know, revisit it and see if there's any course correction we can do.
Right. And what about you? You spent most of your career in the banking industry. Do you think there's any connection that employees should be looking for a coach within their industry, or does that matter?
That's interesting. Good question. I believe that most of the things that occur in executive coaching transfer from one industry to another, to another, to another, to self-employment. Usually the types of things that an executive coach would be brought in for has to do with problem solving and communication and teamwork and really behavioral types of competencies. So I don't think it necessarily matters if your coach comes from a particular industry. It can be helpful, you know, if they understand your business. But I think through coaching, really a good relationship, you're going to learn a lot about that person's business and what they do.
Right, right. I agree.
Well, so Jody, one of the places I went in preparation for today was to take a look at what's happening in the world of executive coaching. And I found an article in April of 2018 from the Forbes Coaches Council that they had compiled a list of the 15 trends that will redefine executive coaching in the next decade. I thought maybe we could talk about each one.
Yes. The first one is the rise of the automated coach, which is interesting, I think, to use technology platforms, micro-learning sessions, gamification tools. So not just maybe face-to-face people, but more of a technology approach.
Yes, well, I'm already being made obsolete.
Right.
You know, actually, I have seen some of this in play, and I think it's a great supplement for that human coaching because technology platforms, can you imagine being able to direct your client to different webinars and different resource libraries and various things on a coaching platform just to make it simple? I mean, I go out now and I pull it together for the individual, but how great if they could, you know, self-select different types of resources to help them with whatever their issue is. I also think gamification is really hot. And I think it's a lot of it's because we're trying to keep the world of work as interesting as we can.
Right.
So you do see a lot of mobile apps and whatnot, like on mindfulness and various things to help keep things at the top of someone's mind and at their fingertips.
Right. Gamification is definitely a trend in the training and development space. And onboarding, more companies are using gamification tools for that too, to, like you said, I think to keep it more interesting.
Right. I think we all kind of need that. So the number two on their list of 15 trends was an intersection of industry skills and coaching methodology. And this really goes back to your question, Jody. You know, coaches who have strong industry and line experience instead of just focusing on certification or academic credentials. Once again, I think it's great to have a blend of both. I think there's a lot of, you know, good in going through a certification program or getting a degree that might support coaching. But they're finding that a lot of people who are getting coaching as a perk, you know, they're actually asking for it, they tend to want somebody who is in their industry or might know their line of business.
Yeah. Which could be helpful, although sometimes I think we get too hung up on that, right? Mm-hmm. When really what we need is someone to help us be a better leader, not,
right.
as you mentioned, it's not necessarily specific to the industry. So, mm-hmm. Item number three, which is interesting, coaching will overtake consulting. And the article went on to say that consulting augments gaps in knowledge, but coaching emphasizes the transfer of wisdom. I like the way that's worded, thinking about having a coach as opposed to a consultant.
I kind of like that when I think about it. A consultant comes in and they help you get something done or get something fixed, whereas a coach hopefully comes in and helps you be better. By the time they leave, they have strengthened some muscles or some skills, and so they hopefully leave the place of employment better. I recently had coffee with a business consultant, and what he does is he goes in and helps businesses that need some operational advice, sometimes financial, just really helps them get their business back on track and figure out how to earn more profit and so on and so forth. And so I said, why don't you call yourself a business coach? And he says, oh, the word coaching, I just don't like it, Susan. It makes me feel funny about it. I said, people welcome coaches because
right.
You're going to leave that business stronger and more viable and better than a consultant who comes in and does a good quick fix.
Right.
So the fourth item on the list of top 15 trends was increasing regulation that will define coaching types. For example, today you can be a coach as just by hanging a shingle out and be a coach. It's very non-regulated. And for the type of coaching we're talking about, you know, we think that works as long as you, you know, you bring real tactical and practical advice. But there's other types of coaching out there. You know, there's career coaching, which we know Purple Ink does and I do as well. There's no regulations around it either. But there's also life coaching. And life coaching has become extremely popular. I think that's an area that sometimes it might make sense that the person who's doing it, because it's so fundamental to the whole person's life, right, maybe some regulation isn't a bad idea.
Right. I agree. By the way, to give a little plug on the career coaching, so that would be something more specific to someone maybe looking for a new job, someone who doesn't have a job, or even someone just, you know, is looking for specific avenues to grow within their company or maybe to pursue other opportunities within their organizations. But that might include things like update to their LinkedIn profile, practicing with interviewing skills, help with a resume. And we have a whole podcast on that too, by the way, we can refer to.
Yes.
The next one, the number five on the list, is the ability to demonstrate measurable results. And I think this one is important to both the coach and the coachee, but maybe even most importantly to the organization itself, right? We could all go to a coach for 5 years if we want, but maybe not be able to show a measurable result. So to do, you mentioned earlier, doing a 360 review at the beginning of the process. Well, what if they did another 360 a year later, 2 years later down the road to see what some of the changes in the comments were? Are there specific behaviors? You mentioned a candidate might work with you because they couldn't meet deadlines. Mm-hmm. Well, now are they meeting deadlines, right? So something that can be objectively measured in the performance of the person.
I think that's really smart. I think it then shows the return on investment of that executive coaching expense. And it may be, as you said, some of those simple things. It could be, is the person getting promoted? And if you offer, and some firms who offer executive coaching as a perk, that really can define, is the individuals going through it, are they ending up in higher level jobs within certain periods of time, so on and so forth.
Right.
So I think it's great. Well, the next trend is the greater acceptance by executives. Kind of reflects the things we've talked about and what we're hearing in the marketplace is that people are not feeling like they're being told they have to have a coach. They're asking for coaches.
Right. The next one is experience coaching will gain prominence. People want to learn in a format that is memorable and fun. And I think getting that individual one-on-one coaching may be different than going to classes or big group training.
So. I think so, too. I think people, for example, who are not good with time management, they're like, they've said to me, Susan, I've been to every time management class offered in this city, or I've read every book on it, and I am not getting better. Well, if you can have somebody coaching you, who's watching you, maybe it's observing is what you're going to do, you'd be amazed at what a lift you might be able to get. So just as an example, another experiential type of fix that I have recommended for a client before that really was helpful was I encouraged them to join a Toastmasters group because they had a difficult time really speaking in front of others. And he came out on the other side of that just feeling really strong and now is really taking it in his personal life as well as at work. And I think he really now enjoys getting up and getting a chance to make presentations.
Love it.
So the next one on the trends is there's going to be an increased focus on positive psychology. And Jody, I know with your Strength Finders background, you're going to love this. They believe that executive coaching will focus more on what people do well and how to maximize those strengths as opposed to executive coaching just people when they have a flaw.
Right. Love that. And we do, at Purple Ink, we do coaching specifically around people's strengths, where we help them to utilize their strengths to get things done or to be a better leader or to be a better person or to improve specific skill sets they're working on. So, yes, I love that one especially. Another item on the list is a laser-sharp focus on interpersonal skills. So think about just taking one aspect of your behavior or your performance and having the opportunity to work one-on-one with the coach around that. I think super powerful.
Me too. I do. So the next trend that's mentioned is content over process. As coaches with deep industry or leadership experience will be sought after, they will have more freedom to approach coaching in a way that meets both the coach and the coachee's needs, which is how I like to do it. So I'm really pleased that's really taking off.
Right. And the next trend they call relationships, results, and rewards. If you think our world is moving quickly now, they're projecting it to move even faster. So having that time frame for building rapport, getting results, will likely even tighten even more going forward. So having a personal coach to help you through that could be very rewarding.
Mm-hmm. And the next trend is working with a coach will be a norm, will be the norm.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And the next one, digitalization of coaching. So we talked about technology, but this maybe even in a different light, webinars, online training, texting, as all of us have less face-to-face meetings in our lives.
Mm-hmm. And then specialization will take over. So executive coaching will start having specialties by, as we talked about, maybe by industry, but also by early career coaching. The executive coach might specialize in people, you know, fresh grads. Mm-hmm. Coaches will specialize in maybe sales, management, coaching, so on and so forth. So they do expect that executive coaches will start to specialize quite a bit more.
Yeah. And as you've mentioned before, the last trend on the list is executive coaching is not just for the elite or the high potentials. I think I agree with them that I see that trend continuing into all ranks of an organization as people look for ways to help their teams and employees be better.
Terrific. Well, that's great. Well, that's the trends. We'd love to hear from any of our listeners who've had good or bad experiences with executive coaching or anything that you would like to share. We'd love to share it with our listeners. The Joy Powered Workspace podcast is sponsored by the InkPad. Looking for a unique and memorable space to host your next offsite meeting, training, or event? The InkPad, located in Carmel, Indiana's City Center, offers a creative and inspiring environment for groups of up to 30 people, with a flexible setup that can be configured to fit your group size and event style. Go to booktheinkpad.com to learn more and mention our podcast to get $50 off your first booking.
Our next area is our newer area of our podcast that we're calling our best practice sharing. We recently asked our listeners, what is the one wellness benefit you offer that has given you the best return on investment? And that, of course, is a difficult sometimes to measure activities that we do or benefits that we offer in the wellness area. So yeah. I love this question.
Yeah, and just to make sure that we're all on the same page about wellness, you know, those types of things that you do in the workplace perhaps to help make people be healthier physically, mentally, socially. And I think that it has gotten a lot of press of late, and we thought it would be helpful to find out what's working for you. What's the one that you thought would be helpful? We were so pleased with all the responses we got, but we did want to share three of them.
Yeah. So the first one from Erin in Indianapolis, her company offered a workout program that was in-house and paid employees up to $2 a day in HSA benefits. Up to $500. I love that their reward was paid through the HSA.
Well, I got to tell you, I can think of 1,000 reasons not to work out, but if I thought I was getting $2 in my HSA, it just might get me up and going.
Right.
Oh, that's love great. It. Well, I love what Scott told us. Scott is a manager of a large customer contact center in the Midwest, and he said, now, this may sound small, but flu shots have a major impact in keeping people healthy and not missing work. You know, I have to tell you, I think it's great because it keeps people at work, but those flu shots also keep the sick people from coming in and, you know, being present when I want them at home in bed. Right. So I'm all about that, Scott. Thank you for that.
Right. I love that. And Deb from Chicago, I love her perspective on a wellness benefit. She said, was having unlimited paid time off. And that was a benefit that gives you permission to take a day when you need to keep yourself mentally and physically well. And I think it prevents presenteeism, which makes others sick as well, as you mentioned about the flu shot.
Oh, so. I do agree. You know, I never thought about unlimited vacation time or PTO time as a wellness benefit.
I know. I like your perspective.
Deb, I love that. Yeah, so yeah. True. Yeah. Well, thank you.
I know one of my benefits that I thought was one of the best from the past was when I worked for an organization that had wellness assessments and would have a team come in once a year and do blood tests and just some basic care that many people who didn't do a regular annual exam were at least getting some of the basics done. And it was always surprising how many issues came out of those.
I agree. I also see where companies sometimes gives you your BMI. And, oh, my gosh, so many people go back to their desk saying, I can't believe it. I can't believe that I'm obese or whatever it was. It was always like, come on, that's just one factor here.
Right.
Okay, so in the news, Robert Half did a study in 2018 on counteroffers that reported that 58% of employers have made at least one counteroffer to a staff member wanting to leave their company. They found that once someone accepts a counteroffer, they only stay an average of 1.7 years afterwards. Mm-hmm. Did that surprise you, Jody?
It did. I knew it was bad, but I didn't realize it was that bad.
I always used to think that when we made a counteroffer to someone and they stayed, I thought I better start looking for who's going to be the replacement because in general, they've already emotionally went through the effort to go interview somewhere else, to get an offer, and now they're talking to me. Yeah, you know, I hope they stay, but from that point forward, I was kind of aware that I may not have this person's heart and soul.
Right.
So the online survey that was developed by Robert Half and conducted by a leading independent research firm included responses from more than 5,500 hiring decision makers in the United States across a variety of professional fields. So Paul McDonald, a senior executive director for Robert Half, said, counteroffers are typically a knee-jerk reaction to a broader staffing issue. While they may seem like a quick fix for employers, the solution is often temporary. When employees accept a counteroffer, they will likely quit soon afterward.
Yeah.
It's really given me a love-hate relationship with counteroffers.
I agree. I think I always hesitate to recommend them because I know the statistics are not good on them staying. But yet sometimes I can't help, but when you have someone you want to keep, that it's hard not to make that counteroffer.
And you know how long it might take to replace that skill.
Yeah.
I do. I worry that other employees will hear that, you know, the person came forward, we ended up giving them a raise to stay.
Right.
And sometimes that can start a cycle of other people saying, all right, if that's what it takes to get a raise here, I'm going to go and get an offer as well.
Right.
So proceed with caution if you're needing to do a counteroffer. All right. Well, hey, please tune in next time. Thank you for listening today. If you've missed any of our podcasts, you can catch all episodes for free at iTunes, Google Play, Podbean, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts by searching on the word Joy Powered. You can also find us on YouTube. If you have questions on any HR topic, you can call us at 317-688-1613 or give feedback on our podcast via our Joy Powered Facebook account or on Twitter @JoyPowered. We welcome listener questions and comments. Thank you.
Thank you.